You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Yumi Komatsudaira, who is a recipe developer, food stylist, culinary instructor, and the president of Kate Seaweed. Yumi grew up in Saitama Prefecture near Tokyo, playing and snacking in her family's seaweed factory. When we hear seaweed, many of us may think of the weeds by the beach that do not look particularly delicious or even edible. But it is like looking at weeds coming out of pavements on busy city streets. What we are talking about here, about seaweed, is the equivalent of plants from well-managed farmlands. In Japan, seaweeds are quintessential ingredients for their rich umami. And umami is the fifth taste after salty, sweet, sour, and bitter, and it enhances and mitigates those other four tastes to make food delicious. And that is why Japanese dashi broth, which is made with seaweed, is indispensable in Japanese cuisine. And seaweed is also becoming a hot topic for its huge potential to make the world more sustainable. Not to mention, seaweed is vegan too. So today we'll discuss how seaweed is used to make food delicious and healthy in Japan, and the different types of seaweed that you can choose for specific flavors and textures, quick seaweed recipes you can enjoy, its umami, the health benefits of seaweed, and much, much more. But before you start, Japanese is available on the Heritage Radio Network, as well as website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now let's start a conversation with Yumi Komatsudaira. Hello, Yumi. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hi, Akiko-san. Nice to meet you again. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is exciting because it's a huge topic. Seaweed is a very key word for consumers and in the culinary world too. So as I mentioned in the introduction, you grew up outside Tokyo, Saitama Prefecture, and playing and snacking in your family's seaweed factory. So could you tell us about your family's business?
Yeah. So I was born in Tokyo and grew up in Saitama, just like Akiko-san explained. And middle of nowhere, actually, there is no ocean around us, but that's where my mom and dad started the company in 1960s. And I basically grew up in a factory where my parents, my grandmother, my uncle and aunt all came to work for the company. So it was a small family-owned company, curating all kinds of different seaweeds from different parts of Japan. And that was the environment that I grew up with my sisters, snacking, eating seaweed all day growing up. Yeah.
Hey, it sounds very healthy and it sounds like real family business. So that's perfect.
Yeah.
Hey. Mm-hmm. And now you are based in New York and work as the president of K Seaweed. So what is K Seaweed and what is your mission?
Yeah, so I started the company, wanted to extend my family business. And where I learned my international division of the company, K Seaweed, K from my last name, Komatsudaira. And our mission is to help people live better life by providing the best nourishing and best quality Japanese seaweed. And, you know, we all know that the typical American diet has a high acidic content, and sea vegetable will help balance our diet with alkalinity. So our mission is to show people how easy it is to put sea vegetable into your daily diet by sharing delicious recipes that are affordable, accessible for, you know, people outside of Japan. And I've been doing that since 2015. Yeah.
Mm, right. Well, the Japanese people are the longest living people on Earth. So it may not be a coincidence. Thanks to seaweed, it may be, you know, part of the reasons why Japanese people live long. So let's talk about seaweed a little more. So how important is seaweed in Japanese food culture?
Oh, I think it's very important. You know, kombu was already delivered to the imperial court as an offering during the Nara period. So, but the first mention of dashi, like you mentioned about dashi, is a Korea soup stock made with kombu, bonito flake, and so on. And the dashi stock made by kombu was introduced by monk Dogen in Kamakura period. So he preached the importance of food in Buddhism, spreading vegetarian cooking in Japan, and taught a culture of dashi broth made from kombu. And thanks to the development of the kombu road, kombu was transported from Hokkaido to the Seto Island Sea and back on the ship that sailed westward between Osaka and Kyoto. Kombu become an important item for exchanging during the Edo period, and the culture of kombu spread throughout Japan. So for, you know, over 1,000 years, we've been really celebrating cuisine with kombu and its health benefits. So it's really ingrained with everything that we make, I would say, with, you know, dashi stock, from, you know, miso soup to simmering vegetables to flavoring food in a way that is really offering umami flavor, which was discovered by Professor Ikeda about 100 years ago. So I don't know. It's a huge topic.
That's why you wrote a book. We talk about your book later. For listeners who's not familiar with Japanese history, so, you know, you mentioned Kamakura. I mean, actually, Nara period, that's 8th century, and Kamakura is 13th. And the kombu root is, you know, kombu, we're going to talk about where it's mainly harvested, but it's in the northern part of Hokkaido. And to go through, to bring it to that capital that was Kyoto, you have to use, you know, you have to ship through down to the south. It's an amazing history. There's I heard about it when I visited one of the kombu merchants in Fukui Prefecture, Okui Kaisedo. And it's amazing because Pacific Ocean is too rough to travel. So they discovered a safer route that's on the back in the Japan seaside. So, and then, you know, that's why the port cities in Japan seaside tend to be richer thanks to that kombu routes. So anyway, so that's a whole other thing. You can have a history book, but it's amazing how deeply Japanese culture, even Kyoto cuisine without kombu, you probably didn't have this kaiseki cuisine as perfected as now.
Right. That's interesting because different parts have different way of using dashi, you know. Where I come from, which is the Kanto area, is, you know, mixed with bonito flake and kombu together. So we have different type of kombu that we use versus to, you know, just like you mentioned, Kyoto area, the Osaka have different way of using kombu with different kinds of kombu. You know, it's depending on where the area is, we really use different way of incorporating sea vegetable mm. into our mm. cooking.
Right. So let's talk about it now. So, you know, there are different types of seaweed and, you know, kombu mm-hmm. is a big one because it's the main ingredient for dashi stock. Yeah. And, but mm-hmm. you have a wakame salad. You know, if you go to Japanese grocery store, there's a wakame in a dried packaged version and you can just yeah. put it in the water. It's instantly you have mm-hmm. a salad. And yeah. the other one is izakaya item like hijiki. That's a tiny yeah. mm-hmm. pieces. And nori seaweed, of course, it's in sushi. Wrapping yeah. sushi. But out of these, so let's just focus on and dashi, the kombu because of the time. So, and also, I have to say, I cannot stress enough how dashi elevates the taste of your dishes so easily because, yeah. you know, plain, if the miso soup is delicious because of dashi stock. And if you put mm-hmm. Dashi in plain chicken soup, you are admired as a good cook, so this is a guaranteed trick.
Yeah, definitely. I would say dashi is our secret weapon,
right?
You know,
right?
Really explain what it is, but it's just really amps up the flavor in the most amazing way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just using a little water,
right? So, to discover the dashi secret. So you mentioned there are different kinds of kombu and different yeah. kind of usage. So maybe you can mm-hmm. tell us the main types of kombu and how they're used depending on the purpose and the region.
Yeah, sure. So I would say there are four main different kinds of kombu. One is the Lishiri kombu. Comes from the Lishiri Island, where it's a remote small island about 20 kilometers, which is 12 miles off the northern tip of Hokkaido. Lishiri kombu doesn't add strong color to the soup and has a beautiful aroma with gentle umami and mild flavor. So perfect for elevating any vegetarian dish or making clear soup or hot pot. It is an essential ingredient in Kyoto, like you mentioned, which is known for kaiseki cuisine, traditional multi-course Japanese meal. This particular kombu is soft, used for senmaizuke pickles, literally thousand slice pickles, which is the popular Kyoto-style pickled turnips. It is made of thinly sliced turnip or daikon radish, marinated in sweet pickling sauce with kombu and red chilies. So that's one of the kinds. The next one is, I would say, Laos kombu. Comes from Laos region of Hokkaido, where it's the largest town on the eastern coast of the Shiretoko Peninsula. It is called the king of kombu. Of its rich flavor broth. When made into soup, broth is cloudy and golden yellow in color, which is amazing aroma too. So it's perfect for creating full body soup. So, and then also the leaves are wide as 8 to 12 inches and 10 feet long. So it is soft, often used to make kobujime, which is an ancient Japanese technique of preserving fish, meat, or vegetable by curing in between layers of kombu, which infuses it with umami flavor. I also have a recipe on my cookbook, by the way.
Okay. Right.
And then two more. We have makombu. It's harvested near Hakodate, it's southern Hokkaido. It is thick with wide leaves kombu and mostly highly rated. So this is one of the best kombu that people say about. It has a refined sweetness and produces clear broth. It is a wedgie shaped near the stem and the lower part are wide. It's typically divided into shirokuchi or kurokuchi, motozorori, with the cut edges of the white or the yellow color. Makombu is used to make high quality broth as well as making oboro kombu or tororo kombu, which are dry shredded kombu that is used as a garnish over soup, noodles, or rice balls. And lastly, Hidaka Kombu, which is what I grew up eating. This one is harvested from Hidaka region of southern Hokkaido. It is known as the Mitsuishi Kombu also. Hidaka Kombu is known for being widely grown, and it's the most popular type of kombu in Kanto region. It has a greenish-black color with thinner leaves, and the edges are not ruffled. So it's good for making broth and also eating like a vegetable. Because it's soft and easy to boil. When it gets softer, the meaty texture softness makes Hidaka Kombu cook quickly, and it's hardy enough to eat as a main meal. So this is often used for kobumaki, which is kombu roll with fish and vegetables, and oden, which is a hot pot with fish cakes and vegetables.
Interesting, right? Yeah. So the magombu, the one first you mentioned, it's often used, I heard, in Kyoto because of the light colored. And like a miso in Kyoto, they tend to prefer light colored miso because they want to showcase the color of their special ingredients. That's very kaiseki style. Mm-hmm. So, so that's interesting. And then also, you mentioned that last one, Hidaka, that's more like texture. And snackable. Yeah. So the texture and color, and also the strength of umami, how subtle or strong, those variations, I think, as if you just cook, even as a home cook, you could really try to select what.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Hidaka kombu is for everyday, kombu choice. Definitely, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so mainly kombu comes from Hokkaido in the cold water, but how is kombu processed? I know it's pretty complicated.
So how to grow or process, you mean?
Yeah, so it's main. I heard it's first, it's hard to farm for, the kombus, wild kombu grows from the bottom to up. The farming is from coming from the hanging from the top. That is itself is kind of against the natural growth. I mean, like against gravity. And also, it's the distance from the, beach side. And there's a whole thing changes the organism in kombu itself. So I heard it's very hard. And so that's one thing. And also processing. And especially for high quality kombu, it's a long, it's hard to handle kind of wet vegetable from the ocean. So, how is it processed, harvested, and processed?
So the wild harvested kombu grow on the leaves on the lie on the seafloor. So it's the seafloor is rocky, so kombu can be rubbed against rock by waves. So the surface of the kombu is protected by a little bit slimy to prevent from any damage or blemishes. And just like you mentioned, the farm kombu grows by hanging from the rope. Because it's hung down, it does not rub against the seaboard. So it has less blemishes and damage. And neighborhood kombu is adjusted by hand. So the leaves grow larger than those of wild kombu. And
right.
So the kombu is harvested the season from mid-July to mid-September. And it takes place only on sunny days when the kombu can be dry in a single day. So the harvest kombu is uploaded from the boat and dry on the dying ground rind with pebbles immediately. So for this reason, before using, we recommend quickly rinse the kombu or wipe the surface with damp cloth. Yeah, and then does it answer your question?
Yeah, so I think I just wanted to stress how hard it is to create quality kombu, because when we see in American beach, that kind of weird, fluffy thing by the beach is not what we're talking about. And kombu is like a gem in Japan. And I did research before and how
kombu mm-hmm. is actually harvested wild and processed. And some gets even ironed. There's a press machine to make it straight and more processable for Kyoto kaiseki cuisine, you know, chefs.
Oh, yeah,
orders.
Yeah.
Ridiculously meticulous process. So, again, you know, all the Japanese meticulous mindset, everything goes so extreme. So I just wanted to stress to our listeners that kombu we are talking about is very, very labor-intensive product. And you should really chew on it when you, you know, the people, how many people try to make it so perfect. So,
yeah. Also, like, you have to do everything in a single day, you know, from the harvesting to the dry. And you can only do it when the weather is sunny. So I think it's always, you know, fight with the natural weather condition makes it really hard to control.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a highly labor intensive process. And every time I have kombu, I just think about how much effort these, you know, farmers give into this product to make it, you know, look accessible for us to consume. So I have every time like huge gratitude.
Right. You know? So to make everything extreme means going even further. So kombu is so carefully evaluated for this quality. So there is a well-established grading system. And that is governed by the Hokkaido Seafood Inspection Association. Yeah. So could you tell us about the different grades of kombu and which one?
Sure.
Yeah, like how it's evaluated.
Yeah. So same type of kombu from the same region can be, you know, larger or smaller in smaller leaves, depending on the degree of growth. So the thickness of the kombu varies, and some have, you know, scratches on the surface, while others do not. So some have a darker or shallower color. So sorting of these kombu is expressed in the term of grade. Each kombu is made with color string to indicate its grade from 1 to 5, typically. For example, so blue for first grade, the red bandeau for second grade, the purple for third, and so on. So each batches where the kombu grows has its own standard by the fishery association, and product you know, ship according to those standards. So you know, ones with wider and thicker leaves are classified as first or second class, and the ones that are you know, smaller or shorter or thinner are classified as third or fourth grade. So, and then in addition, the product for processing, we call kakohin, and the damage standards, these are used for a variety of purposes, you know, such as for packing in larger bags for soup stock, for processing such as, you know, toro kombu or tsukudani and so on. So the grade is based on the thickness and the width of the leaves with the size of the kombu, typically. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the kombu with higher grade is better flavor or more umami. But the thicker it is, it has more flavor and packed with umami. So first grade is tend to be thicker, beautiful, no blemishes. And then as the grade going to third or fourth, it's more accessible for everyday usage. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, and then you said the location-based difference. I mm-hmm. heard it's called the Hamakakusa, and it's like, you know, vineyards in Burgundy, where it comes from determines first. And then the grading, I heard, is 1 to 5. So, and if when it's packaged, it looks like, I don't know, like gift item, like origami or something very...
Oh, yeah, if you give, first grade, and looks like really amazing. It makes it a special gift, definitely.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that, you know, third or fourth grade are no good. It's just, it's overall, the looks are very important. And, you know, wild versus, farm are also different elements.
Mm, right. So,
but I like all of them, you know, and I would say depending on what you use for, you can choose different type of grading combo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to give as a gift, you wanted to give maybe a higher grade versus if you want to use every day, you know, you just have a different price point, of course.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, if I was a kaiseki chef in Kyoto, and you need a consistency, right? And for the easy to process, yeah. The same side, same thickness mm-hmm. to serve your, you know, customers. But I'm a home cook. I just want to have tons of umami, so I don't care the shape of it, right? So that's the difference. So, yeah, the point is that there are a lot of care paid attention to this, making this combo product, and you have a choice, and it's amazing. So, So this, and also it's not just how delicious everything gets thanks to the flavor of umami, but kombu, and there are health benefits too. So what are the health benefits of eating seaweed, kombu and seaweed, depending on what kind of...
Yeah, so there are so much to talk about the nutritional value, but, it's an amazing source of omega-3, which, you know, lower the risk of heart diseases, depression, arthritis. You know, sea vegetables are also rich in antioxidant, vitamins and minerals and iodine, which support healthy thyroid function and improve skin, teeth, and bone health. And then also wakame seaweed, we haven't really talked about wakame, but contain excellent amount of protein that people don't really know about. It has amino acid score about 100, which means that this is the same amount protein as beef or eggs. So it contains all 9 essential amino acids. And also nori, we haven't really touched base about nori, but you know, it has a high score of 91 as the protein. It's called truly the protein of the sea. So also wakame is helpful for stress care. It contains a high amount of magnesium. It's involved in function of 300 different enzymes. So magnesium is diminished from stress and alcohol. So if you feel a little stressed out, it's a good idea to incorporate maybe a wakame salad in your diet. Also, it contains a fucocaxantin, which lowers the bad cholesterol and help control blood sugar and blood pressure. So many studies show that people who eat sea vegetable have a reduced risk of heart diseases and cancer.
Yeah, and also, you know, like you can snack on kombu products and then it's good for diet, good fiber. So there's not too much harm unless you eat the crazy amount of kombu or seaweed, which is hard to do. So, yeah, because you can, iodine could be overconsumed. So... as far as you just have a normal amount, you just keep eating seaweed salad every day, and that could be a little problematic, but it's usually very healthy.
Yeah, overall, seaweed is known to contain one of the highest amount of protein, minerals, and trans mineral. Some are much higher than the land vegetables. So, when you have vegetables, land vegetable, it's the same concept to me. You know, but maybe a little bit more healthier and more mineral driven nutrients. So, yeah, so if you don't know how to incorporate your sea vegetable, just think about it's a vegetable from the sea.
Right. Okay.
You know?
right? So we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll dive into great kombu recipes to maximize its umami. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats on Heritage Radio Network, HRN. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Yumi Komatsudaira, who is a recipe developer, food stylist, culinary instructor, and the president of K-Seaweed. So, do you have a new book called Japanese Superfoods, which I found very informative and impractical? Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So maybe you can share some of the recipes you included in your book. It's that the book is all about amazing charm, deliciousness of kombu seaweed. So give us some of the great recipes we can share.
Yeah, thank you for including my book. It came out last month. And, superfood, what is superfood is? You know, it has been used to describe foods that contribute high level of health benefit, boosting immunity, reducing inflammation, and helping restore and maintain gut health. And as a native Japanese, I not only have grown up eating seaweed, fermented food, green tea, natto, and miso, but also developing a palate to appreciate the best quality and authentic Japanese cuisine. So because of my family business, food was always the center of our lives. And we celebrated eating whole foods instead of fast food. So this has informed my life, and I wanted to share it with others in my book. So this book helped you to discover the secret of Japanese superfood and learn how you can incorporate them into your daily meals. I combine my extensive expertise with ocean vegetable and Japanese cooking to show you how to create simple, delicious, and super healthy Japanese style meal at home. And I try to present affordable, accessible, and the invented version of my family recipe and classic comfort food in this book.
Okay.
Yeah, so some as familiar dishes for many of you, and some are very special pass on from my grandmothers or my mother. Yeah, but I try to use the local source ingredients along with my seaweed so that everybody can basically create something that you are eating in Japan, but only outside of Japan.
Right. So can you share some of the recipes?
Yeah. Yeah. So so the typical, my favorite is yudofu. Yudofu is one of the traditional Japanese hot pot. And this was the dish that Professor Ikeda discovered umami through kombu. It's basically a hot pot. It's hot pot in the kombu broth, and then you just drop a few pieces of tofu, and then in the middle there is a cup that you cut. You cook the bonito flake and the chopped scallions, and you can eat as side dishes, or I like to eat when I want to eat something healthy, warm. this is my go-to recipe. And also I have the quick miso pickle recipe. I also use the kombu with it. This one is used for, you know, you might already have the ingredients in your fridge, but miso and yogurt to recreate a traditional style Japanese nukazuke pickles. And also a few recipes using kombu, such as kombu soy sauce. This is my favorite. You basically put a piece of kombu into your regular soy sauce to make umami-packed delicious soy sauce. And then also kombu vinegar is the same concept where you put the piece of kombu into your rice vinegar to really bring up the natural sweetness into the ordinary vinegar.
Right. Yeah. So I mentioned earlier in the introduction, so the umami of kombu is tremendously powerful because it increases the saltiness and sweetness and kind of rounds out sourness and the bitterness in food. So yeah. When I'm cooking, something is missing and I put the kombu, like tiny little kombu, it just elevates everything. And my cheat recipe is, you know, rice cooker. I just cook regular rice, but then put a little bit of kombu in there. And whoa, this is something like ryote, you know, Japanese restaurants, quality rice. So, yeah, there's so many tricks you can use easily. I mean, just that people can order kombu from your KCB website, as well as, I think, you know, just Japanese grocery store. Now, I think Whole Foods and other supermarkets sell kombu too, so.
Yeah, can I share something interesting?
Of course.
So 2016, I hosted my very first workshop, and I went to PS29, which is the elementary school in Brooklyn, and I showed the kids how to make dashi. And these kids never seen kombu or bonito flake, but I presented it two different cups. One is the regular water, and the other one is dashi made with kombu and bonito flake. And by the way, those two ingredients mixed together really umami intensify as much as 7 or 8 times. It's like a synergic effect. So when I asked them, 20 students, which cups are more delicious, 20 out of 20 students said one with the dashi in it. So these kids don't know the language of umami, but they can taste regular water with miso paste versus dashi with miso paste. There are night and day difference. Mm. And yeah, they don't know what that means, but they all said this one tastes so much better, so much delicious, and they don't know why. Mm. So it really shows me, you know, huge excitement that even though you have no language, you know the taste from, you know, which one is delicious or which one is flat.
Right.
So it actually makes that kind of round, you know, mouthful flavor.
Mm, right. I think, you know, umami sounds like Japanese, but it's rich in tomatoes and cheese and all those universal food items. So that totally makes sense. And maybe you created a couple of future chefs at the workshop.
Yeah. And also, you know, newborn babies typically have their first taste of umami in breast milk, which also contains a large amount of glutamate. So there is a sense of familiarity in all umami flavor as it is among our early taste memories. So although you never try dashi, perhaps we have experience as a baby from, you know, what the deliciousness, what the peacefulness that gives from the glutamate through, you know, breast milk.
Mm, that's truly universal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And well, it's all great, but unfortunately, seaweed is facing a serious crisis due to global warming. And I heard that the production of kombu in Hokkaido, which is the major production hub of kombu, and mm-hmm. is really facing the crisis. So, yeah. And I heard now half of the amount compared to 30 years ago is produced in mm-hmm. Hokkaido. So, mm-hmm. you know, because of the kombu needs cooler temperatures to reproduce yeah. and survive. So what do you think about mm-hmm. the current situation affected by the changing climate in terms of kombu?
It's sad. It's a serious problem, you know, since 2016, it's a drastic decrease amount of harvesting. You know, something like 95% less today than in the past, especially where the makombu is harvested near Hakodate. And also, you know, global warming contributes a great damage. You know, sea urchins, they love to eat kombu. And they like to eat wild harvest kombu. So not so much for the farm because it's hanging in the rope, but they like to eat the wild one. So it really destroys the natural wild harvest of kombu. And also, you know, people changing their diet, like our diet, even in Japan, people make dashi less and less every year, you know, because of the diet requirement has been changing. People have, you know, different lifestyle. People consume less kombu versus using granulated powder. So that also contribute a great deal of, you know, decreasing our harvest amount of kombu. So it is kind of sad as a Japanese, but that's the truth.
Right.
So that's the reason why I wanted to keep showing using the whole food ingredients, you know, rather than using quick, like kombu-like ingredients, you know.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, kombu itself is very sustainable. You don't have to have a massive mm-hmm. land or any fees. And
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Right. So it's such mm-hmm. a sustainable ingredient by nature. And people also, mm-hmm. Different kinds of seaweed can be utilized as a fuel source, or there's so much we can do with. So hopefully we have to preserve those precious sea vegetables. You know, to do that, we have to maintain cooler temperature for them to survive in the balanced mm-hmm. Ecological system. So, well, anyway, so, so what are your plans and dreams in 2023 and beyond?
Just keep doing what I'm doing, you know. So I have a couple of books, book deals on the horizons. I'm traveling more extensively, spreading my message through my new book, Japanese Superfood. And, you know, really celebrating how to use these natural products and then incorporate into a diet. And that's I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
I think what you're doing is very valuable, and hopefully people get more aware of what we discussed today. So where can we find your updates online and on social media, and where can we buy your book?
Oh, yeah. So you can find me at kseaweed.com. That's kseaweed.com. And I'm on Instagram at k_seaweed, SEAWEED.
And you're in the good book, available on any bookstores?
Amazon, local bookstores. Please support the local bookstores.
Right. So the title again is Japanese Superfoods.
Yes.
Right. Well, that's congratulations. It's a great book, and I love the book. So I have to start looking more with your recipes.
Yes, please. Yes.
All right. So good luck, and thank you so much for joining us today, Yumi.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or at kikokatema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Armin Svensson, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week.
Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.